I have introduced a couple of new symbols for you in this next picture. Now, switches and the whole notion of what is a normally open, normally closed contact. The switch, when it's at rest, especially if it's a push-button switch or a switch that starts out in a given position, is labeled NC on one terminal and NO on the other terminal. What this means is that that terminal, when the switch is at rest, is the NO terminal, is normally open. It's the abnormal state whenever, say, it's a push button that were pressed, would actually make contact, versus the side that's normally closed, that's its at-rest position, and it goes open whenever there's some kind of an actuation on the switch. These switches, you think of them as sensitive toggle switches that initially started out in one position, but whenever the clock goes off, the alarm clock starts dinging, this little blue string that I've attached kind of yanks the switch over to the other position, and so an action is assorted at that point. What you have in this circuit is at its initial time zero seconds, neither timer has done anything, and so the circuit takes the current source, the 1 amp current source, and feeds it up through the switch on the left side into a switch on the right side that's normally open, so it's not doing anything, and on out to the 1 farad capacitor. This 1 amp will charge the 1 farad capacitor in that configuration endlessly, 1 volt per second. 1 amp, 1 farad, you know, 1 amp pumped into a 1 farad capacitor will charge the capacitor forever, 1 volt every second. So the first second you have 1 volt, the second second you have 2 volts, 1,000 seconds later you have 1,000 volts. It's just a linear straight line. It just charges forever. If you started out with a capacitor that already had 500 volts on it and you hooked up this circuit, it would continue to charge from that point. 1 second later it would be 501 volts, another second later it would be 502 volts, and so on. However, 1 second into this, assuming the capacitor started at 0 volts, 1 second into this cycle, the first timer is set to 1 second, and it starts dinging and yanks the switch over to the normally open side. Well, it opens the circuit on what had been the closed side and shorts the current source to ground at the same time, which prevents the current source from wasting lots of power. Current sources don't use any power when they're shorted versus voltage sources that don't use any power when they're open. You need to remember that. Okay, so at that point, the current source is cut off from the 1 farad capacitor. And now the 1 farad capacitor, having no additional current to charge it, remains steady state at whatever voltage it was. Well, that was at 1 second, we were up to 1 volt, and if you look at the charge curve that I've given, you have this linear line that goes up to 1 volt. 1 second later, the first timer goes off, disrupts the current coming to the capacitor, and so the capacitor flatlines at 1 volt for a while. At the 2 second mark, the second timer goes off, and it takes the normally open contact that had prevented the 1 ohm resistor from being connected to the circuit, and closes that, and creates a path for the 1 farad capacitor to leak out into the 1 ohm resistor. And then you get the more interesting curve from that point forward that is described as a logarithmic, or well, a e to the 1 over e to the x kind of thing, an exponential decay curve, as it's sometimes referred to. What is happening here is you have a capacitor that has a voltage in it. And that voltage is driving a resistor, causing a current. Initially, a 1-ohm resistor is going to draw 1 amp because there's 1 volt present. But as the voltage, as the current is drawn out of the capacitor, it discharges the voltage on the capacitor. The voltage goes down. And so for the first initial response, there's lots of current because the 1-ohm resistor doesn't change its resistance, but there's a volt driving it, so you get a full amp of current. And so at first, the capacitor discharges very rapidly. But as time goes on, the voltage that the capacitor has to power the resistor is less than what it was. And so there's less current, so the resistor doesn't draw the voltage out of the capacitor as quickly, because there's less current. Well, in point of fact, the resistor never ever draws all of the energy out of the capacitor, at least not in theory. At some point, you get to where you're splitting hairs. You're saying, well, you know, 50,000 years from now, had this circuit remained connected, certainly all of the energy had to get out of the capacitor. Well, in theory, no, it doesn't. But in practice, at some point, the random motion of electrons within the wire is so much larger than the actual current flow that's flowing through the resistor, that it becomes kind of a moot point. You really can't even measure the amount of current that's there, even with the most sophisticated instruments in the world. So what we say about this is that you are heading off toward an asymptote of zero, in this case, a zero current, 0 volts. It is rather like trying to describe a person on a journey across the United States. He starts out in New York and he's going to California. And the first step he makes is halfway there. So plop, he lands on Colorado. And the next step he makes is halfway to his destination again. So maybe plop and he's in Nevada or something. And the next step is half that distance. He always takes half steps. He never takes a full step to get there. Well, in point of fact, he'll never get there, because the steps are always going to be half as big as the previous step was, and you'll never reach your destination. You'll get incredibly close to it in just a few steps, but trying to get even closer with thousands of steps makes, you know, you never quite get there. Well, that's kind of what's going on here. And it helps to kind of imagine that, you know, as an analogy. Okay, so that's what's going on when you charge linearly with current and you discharge reciprocal exponentially with a resistance. Similarly, you can charge with a voltage source through a resistor, and you'll get the same kind of curve going the other direction. You could, rather than charge it up with a current source, you could charge it up with a voltage source and a 1-ohm resistor in series, and the effect would be very similar. Okay, on to the next picture. I show, in this case, the first timer is set to 2 seconds. That's the timer on the left. That's not the important one. I mean, it's not the first thing that happens. The first thing that happens is one that's set to 1 second, and it's on the right. It's to the right of the first timer. What you have here is a battery driving, well, in this case, both a battery that's a 1-volt source driving both a 1-ohm resistor and a 1-Henry inductor. We will assume that the meter that measures current is an ideal meter, that the inductor is an ideal inductor, that the inductor has no resistance. the wires don't have any resistance, that the battery is a perfect battery. And in that configuration, current, you pump an inductor with 1 volt, a 1 Henry inductor, current will rise at the rate of 1 volt per second forever. If you were to somehow get a hold of an inductor that already had lots of current in it, and it was supporting maybe 500 amps, and then you connected this 1 volt source, you would start at 500 amps, and a second later you would be 501, and another second later 502, and so on. So we assume that the inductor was devoid of any energy, or any charge, well, any magnetism, and we feed the battery, the 1 volt battery, to the inductor, and we start this linear rate of rise. That's exactly 1 amp per second. When we get to 1 second, the first timer times out and disconnects our voltage source from the inductor, and simultaneously it creates a path through the other, through what had been the normally open terminal, back through the other switch to ground, and this shorts out the inductor, and that traps the magnetic field within in the inductor. And since we're stipulating that this is a perfect inductor, there is no resistance, that 1 amp of current will flow forever, as long as that condition is maintained. So you get a steady state result. That is, the inductor is now providing current through its own windings, back through those switches, back to ground, and there's no energy being delivered or wasted. There is no energy. We're assuming perfect wires and things. There's no voltage drop across them, so there's no energy. Okay, at 2 seconds, the second switch, well, the switch on the left, opens. And whenever that switch opens, now the resistor that's connected across the inductor, you know, the inductor is in series with an amp meter, but we're making the assumption it's a perfect ideal amp meter. So what we have now is an inductor in which the resistor is wired across the inductor. That resistor is suddenly now taking that 1 amp of current, and you put 1 amp of current through a 1-ohm resistor, you get 1 volt. And so initially, the inductor powers the resistor and provides 1 amp. And the resistor then drops 1 volt, because that's what happens whenever you pump 1 amp of current through a resistor that's 1 ohm. It drops 1 volt. But because the positive end of the battery was causing current to flow, one way to look at this is to say that the negative end of the battery was providing electrons feeding up through the inductor, and now the inductor has those electrons trapped. Whenever the inductor powers the resistor, the polarity is in the opposite sense. That is, the resistor now sports a negative 1 volt, because the inductor is now the source of the power, and it's current that it's providing, so the resistor is dropping a negative 1 volt. It's important to understand that. It's also important to understand that it's current that's coming out of the inductor. But as the inductor delivers current and the resistor dissipates it as a voltage, thus watts, for the first time you now have watts. You have a 1-ohm resistor having 1 amp of current flowing through it and a volt across it. 1 amp times 1 volt is 1 watt. You're delivering wattage, you're delivering power or energy. And as a result, the magnetic fields that are stored in the 1 Henry inductor start depleting, and they deplete the same way the resistor model did with the capacitor. They deplete a reciprocal exponent kind of thing. It's like trying to go to California taking half steps all the time. You never reach it, but you get amazingly close within what we call 5 time constants. In fact, it's a fraction of a percentage after 5 time constants. Okay, so what is this stuff called a time constant? The time constant can be thought of as a unit of time that has to do with the amount of inductance and the amount of resistance in the circuit. If you look at what's going on with the inductor circuit and I change the resistor from a 1 ohm resistor to a 5 ohm resistor, the 5 ohm resistor, now, because the current is still 1 amp, is going to drop 5 volts. So the voltage shot way up. But now there is 5 times the amount of power being dissipated in the same period of time, and so what happens is it depletes this inductor's energy 5 times faster. And so you get a curve, which is outlined by the red line that I've shown here, that the resistor uses up the energy much more quickly, and so the curve is shaped much different than the blue curve, which is for the 1 ohm resistor. Incidentally, the higher the resistance that you use with an inductor in a circuit like this, the higher the voltage. And in fact, if you take an inductor and you pump lots of current through it, and then you just suddenly remove the voltage source, if you can remove the voltage source quickly enough, the inductor will find a way to short out. It'll generate so much voltage that the air around the windings, if nothing else, will ionize, and you'll jump a spark across the windings of the inductor. The inductor will find a way, any constant current source will find a way to bleed that energy off into air, if nothing else. Which brings me down to the lab experiment that I've set up for you. Any relay has inductance in it, and so with a very simple circuit, you can actually see this stuff in action. It really does work. In this case, I use a 9-volt battery on the left, and on the right end, I end up with 140 volts with the experiment that I put together. Your mileage will, of course, vary depending on the relay that you use and how good your meter is, but you should get substantially more voltage out than you started with. It's a cute little experiment and something that you really should try it. You'll learn a little bit. Also, make sure to pay attention to the direction the diode is facing and the direction of the battery, because you charge with the battery, in this case positively, you charge the inductor, and you expect the inductor to have a negative kickback, which that's what it in fact does. If you get the diode turned around, you'll have depressingly bad results. Also, I've shown a polarized capacitor. The curved line on a capacitor is always the negative end, and so the straight line is the positive end. In point of fact, a 2.2 microfarad, 250 working volt capacitor is probably not going to be a polarized capacitor. Usually that value just is a non-polarized capacitor. It's not an issue. But if it turns out that it is an issue for you, well, you at least know which way to hook up the capacitor. And in the experiment, I call it a 2.2 microfarad capacitor, 250 working volt. That's what I happen to have laying on my bench at the time. In point of fact, you could probably get away with as little as 1 or maybe even half a microfarad, or as much as 5 or 10 microfarads. It would make very little difference to the experiment, although it would take, with a 10 microfarad cap, it would take a substantially longer time to bring the voltage up to 140 volts. In my case, this particular experiment took about 5 or 7 seconds, if I remember right, to get the voltage to stabilize at 140 volts. So the size of the capacitor will just change the timing of the experiment. As for the 250 working volt, I read 140 volt. I wouldn't be surprised if some people out there doing this experiment ended up with over 1,000. It's possible. I call out a 4003 diode, which I remember, if I remember right, is rated at 200 volts. you know, that ought to be enough, but if it isn't, the diode will just break down and it won't damage the diode. There isn't enough power there. But finding the capacitor, it doesn't have to be exactly the ones I've called out, and it's always safe to run a capacitor that has a higher working voltage. If you happen to find one that's a 2.2 microfarad at 500 volts, then that's just all the better. As for the relay, the coil in the relay really, and the amount of current that the coil draws, has a lot to do with just how much voltage you'll get out of this thing. In this particular case, it was a cheap little Radio Shack relay bought years and years ago. They don't have those anymore. The one I had happened to be clear, and it'd be nice if you get a clear relay if you're new to relays, because you kind of need to get a feel for how these things work. And whenever you connect a battery directly across the coil of a relay, not as I have shown it here, you'll actually see the little lever on the inside of the relay kind of physically move, and you'll get an appreciation for how these devices actually work. Other things, places where you might obtain these things, I mentioned surplus stores. You'll just have to kind of scout around for the electronic store in your area to find somebody that... Oh, also, you'll notice that I'm using the NCNO notation inside the relay. Normally closed in this case means the relay unenergized, just sitting there on the table. Whenever you apply current to the coil, the little metal bars that I've shown is the permeable magnet thing, the two parallel lines above the coil. You can kind of visualize schematically that those two lines kind of flopping down against the coil as the coil attracts them to it. And the blue link, which is an insulator, carries the mechanical motion of that two-line thing kind of flopping down. It sort of carries the lever of the switch to the other position. Well, what this circuit does, if you haven't figured this out, is this is called a relaxation oscillator. It's essentially you're wiring up a buzzer out of a relay. The 9-volt battery comes in through the normally closed contact, feeds out of that back into the coil, back to ground, and that energizes the coil. Well, as soon as the coil energizes, it tends to open the contacts. Well, that disrupts the electrical path from the battery, and whatever inductance has built, you know, has caused a voltage to get built up on the coil, you know, gets shot through into the diode temporarily and helps charge the capacitor. But the magnetic fields on the coil go away in that condition. And whenever they go away, then the permeable magnet, the pole piece, relaxes, and the springiness of the switch pulls the magnetic pole piece away, and it makes contact with the battery again, and then the cycle just repeats. It endlessly, you know, rebuilds the magnetic fields, pulls the switch open, then the magnetic fields collapse, and the switch goes closed again, and so on. And so that's basically a nice description of how that part of it works. One word to the wise, don't get your fingers across the capacitor. It will definitely tell you about it. it will be uncomfortable, I guarantee it. And the other thing is if you do connect up this circuit, leave your meter connected to it. Don't disconnect your meter and let the capacitor charge up to some wildly high voltage without any current draw. The meter is providing a drain on the circuit. Without any current draw, that capacitor could easily charge up to thousands of volts. And if you connect your meter to it after it's charged, your meter will go, you know, sailing off the end of the peg, and it's not good for the meter, and it's probably not good for the capacitor. It probably can't withstand being driven beyond its working voltage for too long a time anyway. What happens to capacitors if you drive them beyond their working voltage is the dielectric layer breaks down, literally. Sparks jump through the insulator, and it sort of turns them into carbon. And carbon's conductive, and then the capacitor no longer works as a capacitor anymore. It has a lot of leakage current. Well, I hope this has been an interesting lecture, and on to the next.